This is a special edition of WMAK's Nashville in 90 Minutes. Recognized by Associated Press broadcasters as best public affairs program in large market Tennessee radio for 1976-77. The day the music died. The life and death of Elvis Aaron Presley. I'm Paul Randall Dickerson, WMAK News. This program is about Elvis Presley. If we are to present a man and a legend that span two decades in the following hour and a half, let us state at the outset that we failed. The news people here at WMAK have tried, in the following 90 minutes, to put together some of the best things about a man who started a whole new kind of music, touched two generations of this planet's citizens as no other individual has, and this week died in the place he loved most, Memphis, Tennessee. It seems in retrospect that Elvis's sudden death Tuesday was no more sudden than his meteoric rise to fame. This program is about the death of Elvis Presley. It is also about his life. And there's the rub, trying to separate what is now dead from what will live on. It was early afternoon in the newsroom of WMAK. This department was dealing with a debate on bank interest before the state constitutional convention, a Nashvillian making it to Paris in a 30-foot powerboat, and a storm front that was moving on Music City and was expected to hit at rush hour. The Associated Press teletype machine suddenly began double-spacing type and cranked out a bulletin that Elvis Presley was in the emergency room of Memphis Baptist Hospital. The hospital administrator was saying the star was suffering from respiratory problems and that it could be serious. WMAK immediately called our Memphis correspondents. We were told that the hospital was not issuing any condition report, but now was saying Elvis had been admitted. And then correspondent Dan Osborne told us off the record that there was reason to believe Elvis might be dead. Good news people, and that certainly includes Osborne, are a naturally suspicious lot. How many times during the past decade had we answered the phone to assure a sobbing young listener that it was just a rumor and that Elvis was alive and well? Still, Osborne was concerned. He dealt with Memphis Baptist Hospital in the past when Elvis had been in for ailments or for checkups. The administrators had always been very cooperative and reassuring. By comparison, the silence from Memphis Baptist was deafening. WMAK broke into regular programming to tell you what we knew as fact, that he was in the hospital, that he'd been taken there from Graceland by fire department ambulance, and that an official at Memphis Baptist said it could be serious. The time was 3:57 p.m. We checked out two other Memphis sources. The hospital was still not telling them anything, and the situation was becoming more suspect. There was a 23-minute gap with no information to fill it, a hole in time that seemed to have no dimension. Brother John was on the air at WMAK doing his afternoon show. A commercial was playing. It was 4:20 p.m. Then something happened. There was a noise that a newsman hears maybe once in 2 weeks, the alarm bell on the Associated Press teletype printer. In the microsecond that it took for the first bell, I knew Elvis was dead. Now, that's a strange feeling. I didn't think that information was about to clear the wire. Somehow, I knew it. I dived for the intercom and told Brother John in the control room not to start a record, to hold airtime for me. The last of the alarm bells died away, and the printer again shifted to double space and began typing, and the first line popped up. It read, Elvis Presley, the Mississippi boy whose country rock guitar and gyrating hips launched a new style. The typing unit was still working on the verb, and the second line was still behind the teletype ribbon. And then that line jumped clear. In popular music, died this afternoon. Brother John flipped on the intercom to the newsroom and barked, 10 seconds. And I was just about to tell you that a part of you had just died, and the words seemed painfully inadequate.
When to summer, springtime too, loving you, loving you, makes no difference where I go or what I may do. You know that I've always been loving you, just you.
WMAK News. Once the word of Elvis' death was flashed on the wire services, Memphis became a madhouse. Memphis correspondents were deluged with calls from radio stations across the country, and networks began dispatching coverage crews. WMAK got through by telephone to our correspondents in the Bluff City, and their first reports were those of stunned reporters who almost couldn't believe what they were saying, though they knew it to be fact. Tom Bearden had just assembled the facts when he reported for us.
Elvis Presley is dead. He was found approximately 3:20 this afternoon by an associate lying in his bed. He apparently died of a heart attack. He was taken to a local hospital here in Memphis, the Baptist Hospital. He was inside approximately 45 minutes while cardio-resuscitatory people tried to restart his heart. About 45 minutes later, they finally gave up those efforts. They never did regain consciousness. He was never revived. His road manager is extremely upset, understandably. In an interview, he was the man who found him. Let me get my head together. I'm sorry. Okay. Presley was taken to the emergency room at Baptist Hospital. Medics worked on him there approximately 45 minutes. They finally gave up their efforts to revive him. He apparently died of a heart attack. Crowds are beginning to gather outside the hospital now. There are about 400 people, many of them wondering what's going on. It's a quiet crowd. They're upset about it. Elvis was very revered in Memphis and, of course, one of the most famous, if not the most famous person that ever came from Memphis. The crowds are also beginning to gather at his mansion home in South Memphis, Graceland Mansion. His entourage is, of course, upset, and the news is leaking out very rapidly across the city as the crowds begin to gather.
Graceland was to be the scene of a constant vigil kept by sorrowful fans from Tuesday afternoon until after the burial Thursday. Reporter Mike Donegan filed this report early Wednesday morning from Memphis Baptist Hospital.
Here at Baptist Hospital, there are a handful of people, maybe 30, 35, milling around out front of the building and in the waiting room up here, looking as if they're in a daze. Some are talking about what they like best about Presley, and some are just saying they're so shocked to learn of the news. In the press relations room, operators are answering calls from around the world, from radio stations, television stations, just interested people who want to know about the passing of Presley.
Joe Esposito, Elvis' road manager, had been preparing for a tour to start that very night. His world had just crumbled. Esposito had been the one who found Elvis lying face down on the bathroom floor.
The first thing I want to do here, his health was bad. Did you know him?
He was fine and all set to go. Supposed to leave tonight.
Tell us what you do when you found him.
I can't talk right now, man.
WMAK and countless other stations across the nation were besieged with phone calls from people young and old. Some wanted to be told it wasn't true. Some wanted just to talk with disc jockeys because they shared the fans' grief. Others called, cried, and hung up, unable to say anything. The Elvis hits were pouring out over the airwaves of America. At once a eulogy, a dirge, a celebration of a legend.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be. I'll be just a lonely baby. Well, I'm so lonely. I'll be just a lonely. I could die. Although it's always crowded, you still can find some room for broken-hearted mothers to cry there in the gloom. I'll be so, I'll be so lonely, baby. I'll be so lonely. I'll be so lonely, they could die. Man, the bellhop's tears keep flowing, and the desk clerk's dressed in black. Well, they've been so long on the street, they'll never look back and think of so. You're so lonely, baby. Well, they're so lonely. Well, they're so lonely they could die.
Well, if your baby leaves you, you've got a tale to tell. Or just take a walk down Lonely Street to Heartbreak Hotel. Well, you will be, but you'll be so lonely, baby. Well, you'll be lonely. You'll be so lonely you could die.
Paul Randall Dickerson has an observation on the passing of Elvis Presley.
We have a shortage of heroes. The death of Elvis robs us of yet another. And it's not just the kids who need heroes. We all do, whether we care to admit it or not. The legend, of course, will live on. And it's probably not even important whether Elvis had ever cut another phonograph record. But he, as a living human being, was important to us. His passing further shrinks the endangered species list heading of heroes. It tears away a part of the living, too, an integral component of us called our youth. A generation of us are very suddenly very much older and very sorrowful.
Those who knew Elvis shared those special remembrances with the rest of us, and those leaders in government and the music industry spoke in very quiet voices. Among them, Tennessee Governor Ray Blanton, who told a grieving volunteer state.
Tennessee mourns, the nation mourns, and the world mourns this great loss of talent and this great humanitarian that came from a sharecropper's son to be elevated by his own talent, his own ambitions, and his own generosity. So speaking for the people of Tennessee, we mourn the death of Elvis Presley.
Among those who liked Elvis's act early on was a Nashvillian whose voice blended smoothly with others on most of the King's hits from the 50s through the early 70s. Neil Matthews Jr.'s name might not mean much to that vast, faceless something called the public, but the Jordanaires has a familiar ring. Matthews and the other guys who put together the background vocals on all those early hits have some very special memories of Elvis Presley. Neil Matthews Jr. talked with WMAK on that rainy Tuesday afternoon. We all found out it was true.
The first time that we did a personal appearance with him was in 1955, and we went to the Fox Theater in Atlanta with him. And we were just come back from a tour with Eddie Arnold, and at that time Colonel Parker was managing Eddie Arnold, and Parker started managing Elvis, and he told us that Elvis liked our singing and that he would like to do a weekend with us in Atlanta, and if it worked out good, then he'd start using us from then on.
It seems that anyone or anything radically new and different has a legion of doom prophets to contend with immediately. Elvis was certainly different. Parents couldn't understand how their offspring could possibly go for whatever it was that this Southern boy did, and were in fact not sure what it was that he did, or that it was even decent. Even the music industry, there were those who snorted about the kid's strange appearance, moves, and style. Many more quietly dismissed Elvis as something that would fizzle out soon enough. Jordanaire Neil Matthews, Jr., says there was something he could identify, and he knew there was a star forming right before his eyes.
Yes, I can truthfully say I called that one, Paul. The first time we heard him sing was on we were on the tour with Eddie Arnold, and we were in Texas. And one of his records was hot. I think Train Train was one of the records they were playing then. And I thought, well, this boy's got something different in his voice, because he's apparently a country singer, but he has a sort of a spiritual feel. And since we love the spirituals, and that's what we really like to do, we recognize that style in his voice, and we really liked it.
We want to pause here momentarily to point out something about Neil Matthews. At times like this, it is perhaps natural for the survivors of a legend to imagine things as they might not have been. There are those who knew Elvis not nearly as well as did Neil, who lost their perspective and imagined themselves Elvis's closest personal friend when interviewed by news people. Maybe it was through genuine grief and a sense of loss. Maybe it was through self-aggrandizement. Neil Matthews did not lose his perspective. He was interviewed by WMAK within 2 hours of the announcement. He came on natural and human and very real. We appreciate that fact very much.
Well, as far as our personal contact with him, he was the greatest person in the world to work with. He never said one word out of the way to us. We always got along beautifully. We did our job, and that was it. We did not have, buddy-buddy contact with him all the time, you know, after hours. There were several times when we would go up and sing with him. He loved to sing spirituals, you know. And sometimes, as a matter of fact, we would sing all night, just singing spirituals.
During the 15 years that the Jordanaires backed Elvis, Neil was in a unique position to learn something of the man behind the star. He assesses the man, Elvis Presley.
Elvis was a very lonely person inside, in that he always had people around him, but still, there's a price you pay, Paul, being one of the biggest and hottest items in show business, in that you can't walk down the street without being mobbed, and so you're like an animal in a cage. And I think Elvis, deep down inside, felt this way.
And Neil has his own personal sense of loss.
I was just telling my wife a while ago, she was almost in tears. And even though we have not seen him in about 5 years, it's like a member of your family passing away, because we have been that closely associated with him. And we'll miss him.
Like an angel,
like an angel,
walk like an angel,
walk like an angel,
talk like an angel,
but I got wise.
You're the devil in disguise, or as you are, devil in disguise. You fool me with your kisses, you cheated and you schemed. You lied to me, it's not the way you seem. You look like an angel,
look like an angel,
walk like an angel,
walk like an angel,
talk like an angel,
but I got wise.
You're the devil in disguise, oh yes you are. In heaven, but I was sure surprised. Hell and hell.
was Wednesday morning. WMAK's morning personality, Alan Dennis, had spent much of Tuesday evening putting together a special tribute to Elvis's life. Alan Dennis, what's the first time you recall hearing an Elvis Presley record?
Oh, I can remember it well. It was a show on a station in Chattanooga, which we listened to every night, called Hayride. And the announcer's name, I remember it too, was Lloyd Payne. And he later became a very good friend, and he unfortunately passed away last year. But he played it and said, "You won't believe this, but listen to it." And it was Elvis Presley. That's the first time.
What was your initial reaction when you heard that phonograph record?
Oh, to be honest with you, I thought it was pretty good, but I still, you know, at that time, we had a mixture of radio. You got your music in between network shows. And I thought, it's pretty good, but I didn't really flip out, so to speak, at that time. We used to say flip out. Hank Williams was big then, and the country artists, Webb Pierce, people like that, you know. And then black singers, we had a black station, and we used to listen to black music in the afternoon, country music at night, because that's all we could hear. But Elvis came along, and then he came out with Loving You, and that's really it. I was an Elvis fan after Don't Be Cruel and stuff like that.
The Tennessean had been notified of the special program and carried an announcement of it. The station's telephone switchboard lit up like a Christmas tree Wednesday morning. Nashvillians called to tell Alan of their appreciation, and a few to ask where WMAK is on the dial. The program was one of the great moments in radio. As it happens every so often, maybe once in a broadcaster's life, there is a cataclysmic occasion to which the man has to be equal. There is simply no choice.
Well, I knew the minute that I heard about Elvis that we had to do something. Tuesday afternoon, the numb feeling set in, but I knew that throughout all that, something would have to be said and done, because there's so many Elvis fans. We all knew that, but we didn't really realize how many. So I was up most of the night, Tuesday evening, piecing together some interviews, some segments for the show the next morning that I had collected throughout the years, and wondering really all along how to present some kind of a tribute to a man that was not only a good entertainer but a great human being, really. So when 6 o'clock Wednesday morning rolled around, I said something on the air to the effect that I had some things planned, but I wanted Elvis fans to call and help out with their remembrances and requests. And needless to say, I never dreamed the response would be so great. The phones have never been that busy at any place I've ever worked, anywhere. And the mail over the past few days is just unbelievable. And as we brought out in our tribute the other morning, one of the interesting things that we talked about, and it's true, on the tribute to Elvis, was the fact that he cared about what people thought about him.
Well, I went into Sun Records, and there was a guy in there that took down my name, told me he might call me sometime. So he called me about a year and a half later, and I went and I made my first record.
Elton WB 0105, take 3.
It was a night.
No. Yeah. I don't think it was.
LTWB 0105, take 4.
Hey, wait for my hand, Chief, before you come in on the beat.
Such a night.
Some people seem to have the idea of a country business is such a young folks. Whatever I do, I always want to do my best for the teenagers. I certainly never want to do anything that would be a wrong influence. When I sing, I just sing from my heart. Some people say it's because I'm offering folks a new kind of rhythm. I really don't know about that, though. Actually, my kind of rhythm is really about as old as music itself.
Born through a party in the county jail. The prison band was there and they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard the knocked out jailbird sing. Let it rock. Everybody let it rock. Everybody in old cell block was dancing through the jailhouse rock.
The thing about Elvis was that he was always polite with a yes, sir, or no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. And in show business today, think about it. Just think about it. That is a little unusual.
When you see things sold on the street, some of them saying, I like Elvis, and others saying other things, do you get money for each kind? Do you get a percentage when they sell an I hate Elvis button?
To be truthful, I really don't know.
It's hard to keep track.
Yes, it is. I don't know who sells the I hate Elvis button.
Well, it's the same man who sells the I like.
I don't want my heart to be broken, but it's the only one I've got. So, Lord, and please be careful. You know I care a lot. Lord, and please don't break my heart. I'll be
you. You know, I think if Elvis could say something else to us, if he could speak a couple of sentences more, that he would probably say something like he said back when he was going into service into the Army back in 1958.
Since this is probably the last chance that you'll have to say something to your fans, do you have any particular message that you'd like to pass on to them?
Yes, I would. I'd like to say that in spite of the fact that I am going away and that I'll be out of their eyes for some time, I hope that I'm not out of their minds.
We talked to Ray Walker on our tribute the other morning at WMAK. Ray's a member of the Jordanaires, the group that backed Elvis on many of his recordings and many of his movies, too.
Ray, I guess of all the folks, you knew Elvis just probably as well as anyone.
Most likely, yes. We weren't in the as personal contact the last 2.5 years since we didn't start the International Hotel with him. We had too many sessions here booked, and I'm not one to travel and leave my family as much as he wanted to travel, so we turned that down. Then the Imperials went with him, and then the Stamps, of course.
What do you remember, though, your first impression, really, of Elvis Presley?
My first impression of Presley was what he felt like inside, I think. I came with him June 1st, 1958, and my first session with Presley was July the 2nd, just before he went into the services. And the first record was Now and Then There's a Fool Such as I. And the year before that, I had been a teacher here for Davidson County school system out at Gower Elementary. And from 7:30 to 8 in the mornings, I gave my children a well-rounded resume of what was really happening in the world, and I allowed them to listen to Presley records mixed with other things, as long as they kept it down, and then I let them read articles on him and everything, because a person who was destined to become what he already was and would be if he were able to keep up the pace, you just can't lose sight of the fact that he's a human being and wants to be known as that. I really liked him, and we loved him, and I say the word like. Like seems trite sometimes, sure. But you know, there's two factors in life. You can ruin yourself if you don't love. But you don't have to like everybody. There's no rule about that. But he was a likable person. And to say we loved him would be an understatement. Sure. But to say we liked him, that takes care of the surface more than anything else. And he was a likable person. And if he got to where he wasn't likable for the moment, it was because of some stress or strain or some normal thing that would happen to any of us.
Right. Well, you've answered a question. Is there anything you'd like to say without any question attached to it?
I don't know exactly. I just really wish that Presley could have known that he was thought of as a human being, like, from the way he felt inside about a lot of things. I wish he could have lived to know that people really saw that he was a humanitarian, from purpose anyway. But I think most of them will see it now that he's gone, and that's a sad thing about death, you know.
Mm.
Because we get so wrapped up in the publicity and we get wrapped up in a man's public life that we never really see the depth of the man till he's gone, and he can't enjoy it. I just wish he could have had more roses while he was living.
Love me tender, love me true, all my dreams fulfill. For my darling, I love you, and I always will.
Mm-hmm.
Wednesday. At mid-morning, the family announced the funeral arrangements, and Memphis correspondent Bob Brame told us.
A family member says Presley's father had decided to open the casket for viewing this afternoon. Presley's uncle says Elvis's former wife, Priscilla, has arrived at the mansion. She did that so early this morning. He says she's taking it hard. They were divorced in 1973. This is Bob Brame in Memphis for WMAK.
The family announced that fans would be allowed into Graceland to pay final respects to the king for a few hours Wednesday afternoon. The crowds at Graceland's gates began swelling. They came from Memphis, from Nashville, from Little Rock. And they came from Mississippi and Indiana and California. And they came from Canada and other parts of the planet Earth.
Thousands of those who loved Elvis, including members of his family, his associates, personal friends, and his many, many fans, crowded into Whitehaven this afternoon to visit Graceland, Elvis's South Memphis home since the early 60s, where his body now lies in state. Memphis police and dozens of deputy sheriffs are on the scene to try and control traffic and to maintain order among the crowd. Several women and children who had come to pay their respects succumbed to the 91-degree temperature and are being treated by the Civil Defense Rescue Squads, which have set up first aid centers beneath the magnificent oaks which grace the front lawn of the Presley estate. Shortly after 3 o'clock, the gates to the winding driveway were opened and small groups of fans were allowed to pass single file past the coffin for a final brief look at Presley. The body is dressed in a white tuxedo and appears much paler and heavier than the Elvis that most of his fans prefer to remember. Tomorrow, the body will be interred at 2 o'clock after a brief private service at the Elvis Mansion. This is Dan Osborne, WMAK News, Memphis.
And in the end, the crowds were as large as they had been in the beginning.
Police say the viewing of Elvis Presley's body has been extended indefinitely. Viewing was to last only from 3 to 5 today, but thousands of Presley fans pushed and shoved this afternoon for one last glimpse of their idol. The crush at the gate below the Rock and Roll King's Graceland Mansion was so great that nearly 50 people had to be given emergency treatment on the lawn, some of them being taken away by ambulance. They're fighting for a 10-second look at the entertainer who died of a heart attack in the big house on Tuesday. His body, dressed in a cream-colored tux, blue shirt, and striped silver tie, lies just inside the foyer of the house. There's to be a private funeral tomorrow afternoon. Traffic on the street was backed up more than a mile in each direction. Governor Blanton announced he had ordered 40 members of an airlift group of the Tennessee National Guard to help with traffic control. This is Jay Bolin, WMAK News, Memphis.
After an additional hour and a half, it became obvious another day and a half would not accommodate everyone. The gates at Graceland swung shut.
It's now or never. now or never, my love won't wait. When I first saw you, with your smile so tender, my heart was captured, my soul surrendered. I spent a lifetime waiting for the right time. Now that you're near, the time is here at last. It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight. Tomorrow. It's now or never, my love won't wait. Just like a willow, we would cry in ocean if we lost true love and sweet devotion. Your lips excite me, let your arms invite me. For who knows when we'll meet again this way. It's now or never. Come hold me tight. Kiss me, my darling. Be mine tonight. Tomorrow. It's now or never, my love won't wait. It's now or never, my love won't wait. It's now or never, my love won't wait. It's now or never.
Throughout the day, WMAK had been setting up coverage of the funeral. Our Lynette Easley arrived at Memphis Airport in the early morning of what was to be the busiest day in the terminal's history. Trying to get a rental car when there are none, and trying to get where you're going in a strange city packed with mourners, is not the ideal way to cover anything. News director Jay Boland of Memphis station WREC came to our rescue, generously offering to include Lynette with his coverage plans. WMAK publicly thanks Jay and the WREC staff for their help and courtesy. When you put two people in one place, one isn't going to be as inherently good as the other. Put 100 in one place and something is liable to happen that's against the rules. Pack uncounted thousands into a city and understand the trauma they feel, and you have the potential for something very bad to happen. There's a major news story here. Nothing did happen. The thousands that thronged the gates of Graceland Mansion cooperated with police even when a virtual panic swept some as the gates closed for the viewing of the body, and they were still outside. And there's a story here about the Memphis police, too. The officers kept traffic moving and rerouted, administered first aid to those who fainted in the heat, and kept the crowd settled. These were not faceless alien beings called cops. These were human beings who understood the grief because it touched them too. The only serious incident was not directly connected with the crowds or with the death of Elvis Presley.
A spokesman at City of Memphis Hospital now confirms two people were killed. At least one other person was injured. That person reported in critical condition. Captain James Sinclair, the night command duty officer, said four people were arrested several blocks from the mansion. The four included one male and three females. An AP photographer who was at the scene said he heard an extremely loud impact sound and saw one body flung high into the air. Again, two were killed, one in critical condition after a car crashed into the crowd of spectators early this morning at Elvis Presley's Graceland Mansion in Whitehaven. This is Jay Boland, WMAK News in Memphis.
That happened before dawn on the day of the funeral, in front of Graceland Mansion.
I was standing over right over in here, and all of a sudden, you know, I was standing here talking to my friend here, and all of a sudden I heard three loud bangs, like it sounded like shots. And then I turned around, and I seen one girl's body go up in the air, and I seen the other one drag, and then all I heard was, anything after that was just the crowd screaming, man. That was it.
An 18-year-old who police say was drunk drove the car. He's charged with a variety of crimes, including two counts of second-degree murder. Two 19-year-old Louisiana women were killed. WMAK's Lynette Easley was in Memphis and covered the burial of Elvis Presley. She picks up the story from here. A story not so much of a funeral and a burial, but of the people. To the survivors fell the pall of grief, and this is their story.
When I got to Graceland Mansion on Thursday morning, about 300 people were in front of Elvis's home. Most of them had been there overnight. Later in the day, they were to be joined by thousands who came to mourn Elvis. I walked up and down the street talking with people who came from everywhere, and I was singularly struck by the fact that most of them could not tell me why they had come. Reacting as they would if someone in their own families had died, they just dropped everything and came. The first woman you will hear told Jay Boland and me that she thought Elvis's death was a hoax when she first heard about it. She came to pay tribute to someone who was never supposed to die.
We just came to be here. Kind of shocked about it.
What do you think about the people selling all the junk, t-shirts and so forth?
I think it's disgusting. They ought to be put in jail for it or something.
How long have you been in Elvis?
All my life, since I was little.
What do you think about the way the people are being handled? Do you think that they should allow everybody here to go inside and go, or at least go in the driveway? Some people say they should let everybody walk around.
No, because you bury your own dead, you bury them in your own way. You don't please other people, you please yourself. And that's why I said I'm shocked about what, you know, the selling stuff here and everything. I mean, all we came for was, you know, say a few prayers and, you know, just to be here, not to come to see a sideshow. I mean, we came a long ways, you know, for a good reason. But when we got down here, we just couldn't believe it.
How long are you going to stay?
Well, we want to stay to see him go by at least. And we don't know anything about the graveyard. We'd like to go, you know, maybe to the graveyard later, but we don't even hear anything about that either.
Did you by any chance have a plan to come to his concerts on this current tour?
No, we was in Indiana last time. He was up there. And he didn't, I thought he was good. Everybody, you know, getting good reports and stuff, but then we heard later that he didn't think he was up to his own power or anything, you know. But we didn't have any complaints. I mean, we love him up there. I mean, as if he would have come from our own state.
Love him here, too.
What ran through your mind, first thing that ran through your mind when you heard about Elvis Presley?
You're kidding. I mean, you know, that's how they come on, the radio station up there in Indiana. They just, we've got some news for you, and it says Elvis Presley just died, but don't hold your breath. You know, we don't know it's true, you know, yet. Then when they came on and really just, you know, said he was dead and they knew for a fact, I mean, just everybody got talking. People just come in and out of different places and just look at you. They didn't say much, you know. Everybody kind of, I think they're mourning him more in Indiana than they're mourning him here, in a sense, because, I mean, everybody's just, you know, really took by it. You know, they can't believe it. And some of us, you know, came. You know, I know quite a few people that was coming. Of course, you don't see them all. I mean, everybody's scattered out somewhere. But, I mean, I really think they're taking it really hard up there because he was there last, and if nothing else, we were really proud of that.
Her attitude was not typical of those who kept the vigil in front of the mansion. Most of the people were disappointed and bitter. Some had lost their jobs in order to come to see Elvis. On Wednesday, about 2,000 people had been allowed to view the body, and those who did not get to see him felt betrayed. They said Elvis wouldn't have wanted it that way. In their opinion, he belonged to the people.
You're rather disappointed in the way that things were handled. You did not get in to see Elvis yesterday?
No, I didn't. We just got here today, and we drove 14 hours to get here, and we drove all night. And I don't think it's right. I think they should let everybody get a chance to get in to see him. I said, they told us 2,000 people got in there. There's 8,000 more people who are very unhappy, and I don't think it's right.
Could they have done that would have been different?
I think they should just form a line and let everybody get a chance to go in and see him just once before, you know, they take him out of there today.
Wouldn't they be here all night if they did that?
No, it wouldn't take that long. It took 2 hours for 2,000 yesterday, so it would take maybe 8 hours for 10,000.
Do you think it was the right thing to do to have the body on display in the first place?
No, I don't. I don't think it's right for 2,000 people to see it if not the rest of them. because there's a lot of unhappy people here.
So are you? Do you plan to lodge any complaints?
No. But I'm telling you one thing, when we get back home, we're going to write a big article of how unhappy we was when we got here, because we thought that at least we could get in to see his home, at least. We went up and took pictures, and they practically knocked you down off the fence up there.
What do you expect to do today? You obviously can't get into the funeral. Why are you still here?
We're not leaving.
Until when?
We don't know. We may stay all night right here.
Did you have trouble?
We have to bring him out of there sooner or later.
Did you have trouble getting a room last night?
No, we drove. We stayed up all night. I haven't been to bed since yesterday.
And you're going to stay here until you see something?
Right. I don't care if I don't get no sleep today or tomorrow.
These people are saying that...
I'm speaking for me.
Okay, what do you have to say?
I've been here for 2 days and a night. We sat through rain and cold and 3 deaths. And one man got mutilated by a Doberman Pinscher running loose in there. And the whole thing is absolutely disgusting.
What's disgusting about it?
They made this thing so big, and we made him so big. We are the ones who did it. And Priscilla went ahead and shut the doors last night at 6:30. There was one woman with heart disease that stood in that sun for something like 4 hours and collapsed twice, and yet she could not get in.
Did you get in?
No.
What are you doing still here?
We're near him. We're near him. And it's just like as if she's trying to take out some revenge on us. But she never even would have met him. She would be married to somebody we never even know her name today, because he was big when she met him. She met him because he was big. And what they're doing here is totally wrong.
So you feel that since the fans made him what he is, they should be able to see him as long as they want?
Right. And maybe I'm wrong, but I believe that the Colonel understands it, if for no other reason but commercial. He understands it. And whoever's blocking this, whoever's causing this problem, I mean, somebody should throw them out the door. I don't care who they are.
Do you feel his body should have been put on display in the first place?
Yeah.
Why?
Because he's ours. He's ours more than anybody else's. He knew it, and that's the pressure it brought on him. But I think there were other ways that it could have been helped, and nobody gave a damn enough.
How long do you plan to stay, and for what?
Probably till tonight. I'd like to get a look at the gravesite or something.
Where did you come from?
New York.
How long have you been an Elvis fan?
God, since I was a little tiny kid, you know.
Came all the way from New York?
I got on a plane for the first time in my life. My boss gave me 2 blank checks because I was cracking up in the office. I was standing there shaking. Every time something came over the news, I started shaking, crying. It's just, it's really, the whole thing is totally unfair.
What did you expect when you got here? When you decided to come, what did you expect to get?
I don't know. I just wanted to see him. I never got to see him alive. And this is his final showing. This is his finale to us.
The funeral at 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon was small and private at Graceland, just family and close friends. The people who handled it told us that flowers came from all over the world. There was a great deal of confusion before the funeral. Elvis's father, Vernon Presley, asked that all members of the press be barred from the Forest Hill Cemetery. The police commissioner later changed that ruling, and we were allowed in at 12 o'clock on Thursday. Forest Hills is a large, well-kept cemetery and the burial place of Mrs. Gladys Presley, Elvis's mother, who also died of a heart attack at age 42. Forest Hills is now a shrine for all the rock and roll pilgrims of the 50s to pay homage to the king. By the time the funeral was over, the fans were crying and the police couldn't contain them. They broke through the gates of Graceland and the funeral party was delayed for an hour. Another group at the cemetery gates broke through, but the Memphis police finally moved them to another side of the street. What you will hear next is a description of the service at Forest Hills, where Elvis was entombed in a large mausoleum in front of which stood a painter dream, a landscape of color with all the hundreds of flower arrangements sent by such people as John Wayne, Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, Burt Reynolds, the Carpenters, and Debbie Reynolds.
It's 4:05. The funeral procession is now coming up to the mausoleum. In front of the mausoleum are many kinds of flowers, very elaborate arrangements sent by friends, celebrities, and Elvis's family. A spokeswoman for FTD told us earlier that the total cost of the flowers just at the cemetery would amount to about $40,000. That does not include those at the mansion. The funeral service was held earlier. It was scheduled to start at 2 at Graceland Mansion. It was a private ceremony for only family and close friends. The press has been waiting at the cemetery for several hours for the funeral procession, which is now arriving with police escort. Members of the family and other people in the funeral party are now walking up to the hearse. Among them is Ann Margaret. One of the pallbearers is a former Memphis disc jockey, George Klein, who was a personal friend of Elvis. The pallbearers are opening the hearse and they're taking out the casket. Among the mourners is Ronnie Millsap from Nashville. The casket is being taken into the mausoleum. The flowers on the casket are from Elvis's father, who was following behind, being escorted by apparently several relatives. The noise in the background is from several helicopters and single-engine planes flying above in order to try to get pictures of what's going on. About 200 friends and family of Elvis Presley are filing into the mausoleum for the final ceremony. The procession was about an hour late arriving at the mausoleum because of the crowds on Elvis Presley Boulevard in front of the mansion and in front of the front gate to the Forest Hill Cemetery. At one point, several fans rushed the gate, tried to get in, almost succeeded. They were put back by policemen, but this held up the funeral procession. They finally were able to enter just a few minutes ago. The last of the family members is now going inside the mausoleum for a short service, which is expected to last only a few minutes. No fans have been allowed in the back fence to get a glimpse of the proceedings. The crowd's dispersing now. The news people and the few who were allowed to watch the proceedings are all going back to their stations. The family will be inside for only a short time, but the Forest Hills people have asked that we not stay around until the end. We've had a lot of time to stand around and to think. In fact, most of us have been standing here for 5 hours due to the rules that have been imposed upon the press by the police commissioner, the city of Memphis. I remember when I was a kid and was an Elvis fan, it used to really make me angry when people would try to rationalize reasons for Elvis's success, would try to put labels on him, would try to overanalyze the impact that Elvis had on us. And it was, I always felt it was kind of insulting. I remember reacting to, well, why are they bothering with that kind of stuff? And then today I find myself in the position of doing commentary on Elvis, expected to be a phrase maker of sorts. And my primary feelings are still the ones that I used to have. There is nothing we can say that would add anything to Elvis Presley. There's nothing we can say that would take anything away from Elvis Presley. I really don't know what more anyone would want said of them than this. The impact Elvis had today doesn't look so much like music history. The people here don't give a damn how many records Elvis sold. Elvis was important to them. They came here to be a part of history, not music history, personal history. Most people that I talked with can remember the first time that they saw Elvis, can remember the first time they heard Elvis. Some of them even remember the dates. They remember his birthday. This is a lot more important to them, historically speaking, than remembering the first time a man walked on the moon. The impact of Elvis on people will never be measured. It can be reflected today with the crowds, with the emotion. It can only be measured in individual memories and individual history. No matter how anyone felt about it, Elvis took up some space in each of our lives. The people today are here to remember that, are here to realize that. They came back to touch base with the 50s. It's a time that's lost now. Some of them said they feel cut off from things. Some of them said they feel old. Several people said they feel very lonely now that Elvis is gone. He was such an important symbol to them of many things. I hadn't thought about Elvis in years. I think that may be true of a lot of people here. He was always there. And one thing I thought about today, I was thinking back to the first time I saw Elvis on television after talking with the fans today. I was trying to put myself in their place, and I remembered something that at the time seemed very normal, but looking back on it and looking at it in a wider perspective, must have been very strange for a lot of people when Elvis suddenly took over, became such a part of our lives, not just the music, but we took the music personally. Elvis, President Carter said, was a symbol of rebellion, and I think he was in many ways. And looking back on that, before Elvis, I used to sing. My mother kind of pushed me into it. She had been a concert pianist, and she always accompanied me, and she also always chose my material. And after Elvis, I wanted to sing Elvis songs. I wouldn't sing what she told me to sing anymore. I was just dead set on singing Elvis songs, or I wouldn't sing. So she either had to give in, or there would be no performance. And I wonder, standing here, I wonder how it felt for her, for years and years of knowing what music was and having just very definite ideas, very staid ideas. And she would go, with all of her musical background and all of her refinement and all of her concert training, that she would go and play for me at a talent contest when I sang Tutti Frutti. And she must have felt very strange. She must have also felt a little embarrassed, because obviously she didn't like what was going on. And she must have felt even more puzzled when I won the contest. And to add insult to injury, as far as she was concerned, my sister looked like Elvis Presley. And she did her best to cultivate this. And suddenly, our lives were changed by the music, by what Elvis represented. But a lot of other people's lives were changed also. And I don't think we understood it on either side of what in the 60s became known as the generation gap.
You saw me crying in the chapel. The tears I shed were tears of joy. I know the meaning of contentment. Now I'm with Lord, just a plain and simple chapel where humble people go to pray. I pray the Lord that I'll grow stronger as I live from day to day. I searched, but I couldn't find no way on earth to gain peace of mind. Now I'm happy in the chapel, where people are of one accord. Yes, we gather in the chapel to sing and praise the Lord. You'll serve
search and you'll search, but you'll never find no way on earth to gain peace of mind. Take your troubles to the chapel. Get down on your knees and pray. Then your burdens will be lighter, and you'll surely find the way.
And you'll surely find the way.
You're listening to a special edition of Nashville in 90 Minutes on WMAK, Nashville.
There were those who knew Elvis personally, and there were those who would have given their right arm just to touch him. And there were those who were kind of in between. His neighbors, who had lived alongside the sprawling Graceland mansion for years, had seen Presley come and go, who often caught a fleeting glimpse of the man who lived in the nice big house. He was special to them, too. One neighbor, who shall remain nameless, remembers.
A long-time Elvis fan?
Well, I've lived here around this neighborhood for almost all my life, about 25 years.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess you sort of grow up with Presley. You know, to me, he was part of when I was growing up. I can remember him riding around on a motorcycle and dating a high school sweetheart that went to Whitehaven and coming up to the gate, and I got to go to one of his parties one time and bumped into him when he was skating. And I don't know, it's just, it's sad. You know, really, it's sad to me because I feel like, you know, maybe today I'm a little bit older. It's like the day the music died. I don't know, it's like the 50s are dead now. And all the good times that, you know, I had then that, you know, in many ways revolved around Presley living out of this area. It's just not there anymore. It's different today, you know, for the first time in many years, I think I can really say that I've changed. And I'm going to miss him, but, yeah, I guess Presley's a legend, and legends don't die. They just keep on and on and on. But I feel like, you know, maybe a little bit of me died. And I'm really sad. Very sad day. Very sad.
How long are you going to stay?
I'm just going to sit around for a little while. Strangely enough, it's peaceful here. And even though it's a rather sad occasion, that I'm just sort of thinking about 1958 and 59 and motorcycles and all the, you know, the really good things that the man meant. He was a marvelous man. He did so much for the city of Memphis. And I hope that, you know, in the years to come that they'll remember the things that he did do. There's going to be some bad things that will come out, I'm sure, but I mean, it's always nice to remember the man for the good things it is. He's been invaluable to the city of Memphis. He's a legend, tremendous man. And again, I'm just very, very sad that it had to go, but maybe in a way that it's better for him to go at 42 and still peaking in his career. And I couldn't imagine Elvis Presley, 75 years old, sitting in an old person's home. I guess he went out in typical Presley fashion, very quick, very dynamic. Sad day for this area out here, because this area is Presley's home, and so many little people that just remember Vernon and Dee Presley coming out, or you can tell the children that they saw Elvis riding around. He meant so much to so many little people too, and I consider myself a little person. He meant a lot to me. He represented freedom. When it wasn't popular for people to rebel, Presley rebelled, which I think led to other people rebelling, the Beatles, and led to profound changes in our country today. And I think that many 18-year-olds who are sitting around without having to worry about being drafted and go to war, they should be thankful to the man, because he dared to be different. And I can honestly say that from what I could view of him and from what I've heard about him and seen, he was a man that truly shook the world, and it's rare that you find that type of individual in anyone's lifetime. He's a great man. Great man.
Do you mind giving me your name?
I'd rather not.
Okay, I understand.
I'd rather not.
So you've been a resident here for several years?
I've lived a quarter of a mile from this house for 25 years. And it's part of my life. And Presley was part of my life. And now that he's gone, I'm sure things will go on, but they're going to go on different. And I can't think back to the old times without thinking that Presley is no longer around. And to me, that's sort of frightening, having to sort of readjust your thinking pattern. I think, you know, as maybe not today, but maybe a week from now or a month from now or a year from now, when people really think about Elvis Presley and what he meant to the entire country and to the world, the changes in attitudes, I think they'll appreciate him a little bit more. I think he'll grow in death, which I think is a rarity among individuals. He'll, you know, he's dead now, but, you know, the legend lives on, and what he's done lives on. And I'm really proud to be a part of it. And even in sadness, I can feel a little bit of happiness being at least partially around the man. And being here doesn't hurt me so much as it sort of clears my mind. You know, my mind is working a lot clearer today, because things are just so different. It's really, honestly, to say, it's the beginning of a new me, and probably an older me. And it's like, you know, you can't cling on to things forever. And so many people around there, you see so many fans that whatever magnetism Presley had, they clung to it. They came for thousands of miles. It's been months and months here. Now, they never see him, but just the fact that they're at his place, sitting there, you know, paying homage to someone they truly, truly love, I think it's touching, and it's quite a compliment to the man. I think he was a first-rate musician. He was a trendsetter, and he did so many things for so many different people, and probably things that most people would never even hear about. You get the publicity on the big things and the many little things that he did. Probably only he and the people that he did it for would ever know. And like I said, there'll be some bad things. There are always bad things. It's easy to slam a person down when they're dead. I'm sure that the people around them are going to capitalize on his death, and I'm sure that there will be many interviews and there'll be many sordid things to come out about Presley and his personal life. But it comes down to remembering a man for the good that he did and for the happiness that he gave so many people. And to me, that's marked a truly great man to endure for so long. And I think, you know, later on, we'll get the full impact of it, and people appreciate him a little bit more. Not so much Elvis Presley musician, but Elvis Presley, the legend and the man. So many different things about him. Intricate, complex individual. He fascinates me. I could spend days and days just watching the things that go on around him, see the people that imitate him and strive to be like him, but never could really be like him, because he was the one and the only, and truly the king of rock and roll. And I'm sure that many musicians owe their existence today to the fact that Elvis Presley would dare to be different. And I admire men who dare to be different, women who dare to be different, just to cut above the average, and yet still maintain common charm about him. Never having to really be in awe of the man, but knowing that he's done so many magnificent things and being able to be a part of those magnificent things. And to be here right now, knowing that for at least a brief second in my lifetime, on my own hometown, on my little piece of earth right here, in my neighborhood, that the eyes of the world will be focused on here. I think it's a historic event. A sad event, but historic.
I appreciate your remarks.
Hold me close, hold me tight, make me thrill with delight. Let me know where I stand from the start. Every time that you're near, all my cares
you came to me. But now I know that I will go. Oh, loving you eternally. Would you please be my own? Never leave me alone. 'Cause I'd die every time we're apart. I want you. I do need you. I love you.
Shelby Singleton is something of a fixture here in Music City. Singleton has been in the music business almost since Nashville has. He owned the old Sun record label, the first label on which Elvis recorded. Through the courtesy of Shelby Singleton, WMAK has acquired an interview with Elvis from 1956, just after his appearance on a radio show in Texas. It was during this interview that the King first talked about a new phase of his career about to begin, the movies. After that, you will hear other early interview statements, and then a rare segment from the old Sun recording studio here in Nashville. Elvis jamming with other musicians. An engineer had rolled a tape. It's now a precious memory. And WMAK thanks Shelby Singleton for sharing it with you this morning.
Well, David, we're still backstage at the Municipal Auditorium here in San Antonio, and it's really a pleasure to get to interview the next artist on our Big Elvis Presley show, because this is the boy that in the last year or so has become the outstanding show business personality in the entire world, not only the United States, but all over the world. This boy, I think, is probably the hottest show business personality in the last 25 years. And we'd like to get him over here to say hi to you, that great RCA Victor recording star, Mr. Elvis the Cat Presley. Elvis, it's wonderful to have you on our show, buddy.
Thank you, Charlie, for that wonderful build-up and everything. I just hope I can live up to what you just said. I'll be all right.
Well, I guarantee you that the two shows that you did here this afternoon and tonight in San Antonio is proof to us that you'll be here for many, many years to come.
Thank you very much, Charlie. I hope so.
It hasn't been but about 3 months since you was here on...
That's right.
San Antonio
about 3 months I was here. Who was on the show with me then?
Gosh, I can't remember at all, but I know that in that time since you've been here, you've been on so many big shows and so many wonderful things have happened to you. I know that you'd like to tell the folks about it. Of course, we've seen a lot of publicity on it, and I know that I guess one of the outstanding things that has happened is the new movie contract that you have with you.
Yes, I guess actually that's about the biggest thing. Of course, it's a dream come true, you know. Everything, it's something that I never think would happen to me of all people, but it just shows that you never can tell what's going to happen to you in life.
Is that with Paramount?
Yes, it's with Paramount Pictures, and it's a seven-year contract.
Seven-year contract. Well, that's really wonderful.
I've had people ask me, was I going to sing in the movies? I'm not. Not as far as I know, because I took an acting test, and I wouldn't care too much about singing in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
well, we saw you.
I get enough singing around the country without...
We saw you on the Milton Berle television show here recently, and I guarantee you that the job that you did with your dialogue and acting on that show was really wonderful, and I know that you'll do real great in motion pictures as an actor.
Thank you very much, sir, and I'd like to tell you that it's really been a pleasure seeing you again, Charlie, and all these wonderful people here in San Antonio, and they really accepted us well here, and we're just thrilled today, and we hope we can keep on pleasing them and giving them things they want to hear.
Elvis, I understand that you received a gold record this week for your Heartbreak Hotel that sold over a million.
Yes, that's right. Yesterday, I had a session in Nashville, Tennessee, and they awarded me with a gold record.
We talked with old Jesse Snyder at the RCA Victor Man here in San Antonio, and it looks like this album, I believe, is going to be the biggest album seller that RCA Victor has ever had in the history of RCA Victor Records, and that's going to really be something, isn't it?
It really is. It's really great. I didn't think it would do as well as it has already when you put it out, but it's doing okay.
Elvis, I don't know if you can hear that or not. I think you can, but I doubt if it's picking up on a mic. But outside the window here where we're talking, about 5,000 kids are hollering, "We want Elvis." I wish we could get this. Let me see if we can get this on the microphone here.
There it is, Elvis. There's the truth. About 5,000 are standing outside the window here, and we just were lucky enough to get our microphone. Did that pick up all right there, Wayne? Gee, well, boy, they're hollering like it was this afternoon. It's a regular riot, and I know that a lot of the newspapers here in San Antonio are going to have stories on it tomorrow about the regular riot that was caused here this afternoon. In fact, it was so bad that I don't think you had a chance to do much autographing, did you?
No, I didn't, actually. I hate not to, but if a lot of people start getting hurt, there's a lot of little big kids in the crowd, and they get trampled on and everything, and the police make us quit, you know?
Well, I know that you couldn't possibly have gotten out there and autographed this afternoon because with that many people, and they were pushing and shoving and everything, well, you would have probably gotten killed, and a lot of people who was out there would have, too. And I know that you would have liked to have autographed if you could have possibly gotten out. Well, Elvis, I know that you have a long schedule ahead of you. You've got, I think you go to Corpus Christi tomorrow.
That's
I said,
right.
Well, it's today when this tape is being played, but you're Monday. You're in Corpus.
Right.
And so we won't take up too much more of your time, but we'd just like to say a million thanks to you and lots of luck to an old Mississippi boy that's doing real great.
Thank you, Charlie.
And keep making those wonderful records, and we'll be looking for that movie when it comes out, and I want to get right on the front row. Buddy.
Thank you very much, Charlie, and I'd like to say that the Norwood people here just me chewing on some ice, I guess. So, nothing wrong with a tape recorder. And I'd like to say thank you for all the spins, Charlie, you've been giving me. You've really been a friend to me and everything, and I want you to know that I really appreciate it, and I'll be looking forward to coming back and visiting with you again real soon.
Elvis, do that, and you keep making those great records, and we'll be seeing you, we hope, again real soon.
Thank you very much.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, now, country and western fans of our Hillbilly Hit Parade, this is an interview we're going to give you here with Elvis Presley. It's taken from the Municipal Auditorium up in Wichita Falls, Texas, where we were last night. Elvis played a big show. I think many of you are familiar with that. In fact, a lot of you were up there. We're going to ask Elvis some questions, let him tell you straight, because I think you get more out of it that way, and I know that each and every one of you are just waiting to hear him talk. Elvis, boy, we want to first ask you how old you are.
I'm 21, sir.
You're 21 years old. Sure heart, you've got a few months on me, I'll tell you for sure. Tell us, before you got in this music business, what were you doing for yourself?
I was driving a truck.
Driving a truck?
Yeah,
Was that back in Tennessee?
Yeah, I was back in Memphis where I live now. I was trying to say I was learning to be an electrician.
You decided to take the truck driving, huh?
Well, I was driving a truck, and I was studying to be an electrician, too, see?
I see, and you got all mixed up in this crazy music business, and that tore the electrician deal all to heck,
huh? Electrician and trucks all up.
Now tell us, how'd you get your first break or to make your first record with Sun Records?
Well, I went into Sun Records, and there was a guy in there that took down my name, told me he might call me sometime. So he called me about a year and a half later, and I went in and I made my first record, That's Right Mama.
Yeah, and then from there on, why, we know a little about what happened, because, boy, those things spun on the turntables like nobody's business. How'd you get your start on the Louisiana Hayride? What brought that all about?
I went down there as a just a tryout, more or less. And I went down there once, and I went back again a couple weeks later, and the people, they seemed to kind of go for my songs a little bit, so they gave me a job down there.
So from then on, you was a regular.
Yeah.
You're not with the Hayride anymore, are you?
No, last Saturday night was my last night down there.
Last night with the Hayride. How'd you pick up these boys, Scotty and Bill? You known them a long time? They live there around you?
Well, they live in Memphis, but I never knew them until we made our first record.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, tell us, what are you doing now? Just making personal appearances around the country? Is that all you're doing?
Yeah, we just touring the country, different place every night.
Different places and working TV shows and this and that whenever the occasion comes. Ellis, you made a screen test. Can you tell us the result of that now?
Yeah, we got a 7-year contract with Paramount Pictures. We'll have a movie coming out, I don't know when, but we started making it in June. It's a movie with Burt Lancaster and Katharine Hepburn called The Rainmaker.
Yeah, we'll be looking forward to that, as I know all of our listeners will, and everything.
Everything.
I got a kick out of that on the hayride last Saturday night, I'll tell you for sure. Well, anything else particularly you want to tell us before we break this little interview up?
Well, I'd like to tell you that I sure appreciate all the spins you've been giving me. You really helped me a lot, and I'd like to tell you how much I appreciate it, and all the wonderful people that have been writing in and buying my records and coming out to their shows, because that's really what makes anybody. It's the people. You make them or break them.
Well, I'll tell you for sure, they sure go for you, for your style, I'll tell you for sure, because we get the cards and letters every day, we play the records. And incidentally, your new album just taking over our Hillbilly Hip Parade. That thing's going like a storm.
That's good, and I'd like to tell you that it's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'll be seeing you again real soon.
We'll be looking forward to it. Thank you.
When I'm with my baby, well, that's when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, one kiss from them, baby, darling, makes me hot more. Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I keep loving in the evening time when I'm with my baby. Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I get my loving in the evening time when I'm with my baby. Well, it ain't no fun when the sun goes round. I get my loving in the evening time when I'm with my baby. Well, it ain't no fun with the sun around, I get going when the sun goes down and I'm with my baby. Well, that's when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, who cares how many times we kiss, cause at a time like this, who keeps score? Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I get my loving in the evening time when I meet my baby. Well, that's when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Who cares how many times we kiss, cause there's a time like this, who keeps score? Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I keep my loving in the evening time when I meet my baby. And it don't matter if it's sleet or snow, I drive in cozy when the lights are low and I'm with my baby. Makes no difference if the rain comes down, I don't notice when the she's around. Oh boy, what a baby. Well, that's when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, one kiss from my baby darling makes me holler more. Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I get my loving in the evening time when I meet my baby. So when we're gonna kiss and kiss and kiss and kiss and we're gonna kiss some more. Well, one kiss from my baby darling makes me holler more. Well, I don't care if the sun don't shine, I get my loving in the evening time when I'm with my baby.
Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining. Shine on the one that's gone and left me blue. Blue moon of Kentucky, keep on shining. Shine on the one gone and proved untrue. It was on one moonlight night, the stars were shining bright. Keep on shining, shine on the one that's gone and left me blue.
Blue moon
Well, that's different. That's a pop song now, Nellie Bly.
That's good.
I'll never let you go, 'cause I love you. So please don't ever say goodbye. Well, I never let you go, 'cause I love you, little baby. I'm sorry that I made you cry, that made you cry. Well, I never let you go, 'cause I love you, honey child. So please don't ever say goodbye.
Be birds flying higher in a sky more blue. If I can dream of a better land where all my brothers walk hand in hand, tell me why. Oh, why? Oh, why can't my dream come true? Oh, why? There must be understanding sometime. Strong winds of promise that will blow away the doubt and fear. If I can dream of a warmer sun where hope keeps shining on everyone, tell me why.
Changed music, he changed hairstyles, he changed lives. He was Elvis, and he didn't even need a last name. From his emergence in the mid-50s until his death last Tuesday, Elvis Presley shaped American culture like no entertainer before him. His songs sold millions, his movies played to swarms, his concerts drew swooning, screaming girls. He was Gable, Sinatra, Valentino. He was a son of the South. He was one of Tennessee's natural resources. He was a good friend. He was a man. That part of Elvis Presley has been buried. What will never be taken away from us is the legend, and Elvis is one of America's greatest. With his long, shiny hair and his wondrous wiggles, he symbolized a protest against the tranquil era of the I Like Ike 50s. And that lead was taken up a decade later by Dick Gregory, Joan Baez, Lenny Bruce, Bob Dylan, and the Beatles. In listening to his records, watching his moves and his movies, and following his career, a generation of Americans learned something about themselves. And that is perhaps Elvis Presley's greatest gift.
Oh, get on up.
I was on that midnight flyer out of Birmingham, smoking in the New Orleans. Somebody help me get out of Louisiana, just help me get to Houston town. There are people there who care a little about me, and I'm all left to pull more down. Hey. Citizens at the terminal gate. Swing low, charity, come down easy, pass it to the terminal zone. Cut your engines and cool your wings and let me make it to the telephone. Los Angeles, you made Norfolk, Virginia, died 4-4-10-09. Telephone's back on, this is the promised land, caught in the four boys on the line.
Nashville in 90 Minutes is a presentation of WMAK Radio, which bears sole responsibility for its content. This program is the winner of the 1976-77 Large Market Public Affairs Programming Award from the Tennessee Associated Press Broadcasters Association. Join us next Sunday morning at 7:30 for Nashville in 90 Minutes on WMAK Nashville.